So, how did Alison Lapper, MBE, a famous British artist, disabled artist, end up being comforted and consoled by a group of fifth class students from St. Joseph's National School in Terenure in Dublin? Well, we're about to find out. Alison is on the line from her home in Brighton. How are you doing, Alison?
Hi, I'm fine, thank you.
Yeah, thanks for taking our call today. We have the teacher from fifth class St. Joseph's National School in Terenure, Anthony O'Flynn. How are you doing, Anthony?
Hi, Ray. How are you keeping?
Good to talk to you. And Adam Murray is one of your students. How are you doing, Adam?
Hello, Ray.
Good to talk to you. Alison, firstly, commiserations on the death of Paris back in August of last year. It's obviously still quite raw. And you were supposed to visit the fifth class students in St. Joseph's in April, but that didn't happen because of the lockdown, but you did a Zoom call. Now, we'll talk about that in a moment.
Yeah.
So, Anthony, I suppose you'll come in here and I'll start off the story and you continue it then. So, as I say, Alison lost her son, 19-year-old Paris, back in August to an accidental drug overdose. You spotted Alison on the telly and you came in and told your students about her.
Yeah. In the bottom drawer of my desk, Ray, there's a calendar, and it's got 12 months on it, and it's got paintings on it. And every so often, when the guys get a little bit, you know, sort of down about art, and they say, I can't paint, I take it out, and I say, come here and have a look at this. And I showed them the paintings, and they say, oh, they're fantastic, I couldn't do those. And I turned around, and on the back are the artists who painted them. And they really are good, but they're painting with their mouths and their feet. And suddenly the guys look at it and say, oh, my God, no more complaints. So I kept that in there, believe it or not, some years ago. I'm talking 30 years ago. So I was going through, you know, things on the net, and I spotted Alison on a show, and she was lifting her shoulder to wipe a tear. And it really was poignant, like, you know, it was a really seminal moment. And I said, God, what's wrong here? Because I'd followed her career path all along. And I only found out then that she lost her only son, her only child. So I came back to the class, and they're a super class. I mean, I saw them this morning in the exchange of books, and they're just phenomenal, including Adam there. So I said to the guys, I said, listen, I want to tell you a story. So I told them the story of Alison. I said, I've been following this girl for years, but something awful has happened. I said, now, you know, when I go to the office, Ray, and I phone a parent, and and they pick up the phone, it could be for boots, it could be for swimming gear, the first question they say is, what's wrong?
Right.
That's how, you know, how a mother lives with all her family. The first thing, are they okay? Are they safe? You know, I often say to staff meetings, listen, it doesn't matter, only did we get the kids back home safe. That's important. So she had lost them. So I explained to the kids. So I showed them the full video on Alison, on her life. And I said, listen, guys, someone out there needs a lifeline. Now, we do a lot of sort of care, you know, and awareness and, you know, mental health awareness. And I said, look, guys, sometime in life you may need sort of a link in there, you know, a lifeline to what you do. We're going to send one to her. Hands up who would like to send out a lifeline to Alison. We can write to her, we can send a card. And the hand shot up. There was this gush of enthusiasm. There was a rush of sort of, come on, let's do it. So we got paper, we got pens, we got colouring papers. And I did the just end of the letters. I left them as they are, Ray. I just said to them, you know, write what you think is suitable. I'll write a letter, you write a letter, and we post them. So it was a huge pack. Got them all off. And they really were. Children have a way of saying things in terms of sympathy.
Can I bring Alison in there? So,
yeah.
So Alison, you got this package of letters from fifth class in Terenure, who
did.
You'd never heard of before in your life.
No.
And you were in the throes of grief at the time because it was very soon after Paris died.
It was.
So what? How did you react to that?
To be honest with you, it made me laugh. They made me cry. And what really struck me was, you know, why would sort of a class of young people be bothered with, you know, an artist that someone they don't even know? So, and they were just, you know, beautiful, all of them. And children, they say things that maybe adults were too scared to say, but they just say it from the heart. And I kept them because I just thought they were really special. And I could see how much effort all of them had put into the cards, and it really touched me. And it did, as I say, some, you know, made me cry, but also some made me laugh. And I just thought, this is just so wonderful.
Yeah.
I need to get in touch to say thank you.
Yeah. And you did. And Adam, you wrote one of the letters, and then you sent Christmas cards at Christmas. And then it developed into a bit of a relationship between Alison and the class and Mr. O'Flynn. And you, as I said, Alison was supposed to be here in April, but that didn't happen. So you organised a Zoom call. So what was it like finally chatting to Alison on Zoom, Adam?
Well, it was nice to actually feature after what Mr. Flynn had told us about. All like it's like meeting someone that you've heard loads of stories about, but you've never actually met. So it was really nice to know, and it was really nice to speak to Alison for the first time. And she told us about a lot of things and what she has achieved, and I thought it was amazing.
Yeah, and she is an amazing woman, isn't she, Adam?
Yeah, what she's achieved is amazing, especially the MBE and what she's done.
Yeah. Yeah. Anthony and Adam, there's still plans, I would imagine, the other side of lockdown to get Alison over.
Yeah, absolutely, because, everything was set up because running up to Christmas, and I mean, this is, it sort of shows, you know, if you just hit the switch, the rest kind of looks after itself, right? Because we're coming up to Christmas and we're busy, we're doing Silent Night, we're doing it to a wrap, and the kids were up, and suddenly in the middle of a class, someone said, "Hey, this will be Alison's first Christmas without Paris." And there was just that graveyard silence you get. And he said, yeah, I know. Well, we have to send her a card. So I really thought to myself, you know, this is a really worthwhile venture because they're thinking on their own now. They're thinking of what else we can do. So I said, right, let's make it happen. So they, again, we got cars, we packed them off. Now, at this stage, it had happened close to the end of December, close to our holidays at the time. And so I was wanting to make the deadline. I had to make sure that they got there pre-Christmas. So they did.
Nice.
And Sally, who does a whole lot of work on the other end of it, got back to us. So I said, after Christmas then, Alison said to me, heart attack stuff. She said, listen, we're coming over.
Right.
And I said, okay, yeah, that's grand. Now, as you know, Ray, and everyone else knows, you know, New York, London, Paris, Dublin, in terms of price, I told him, that's going to cost me a fortune. Yeah. So I said, right, I'm going to have to get working back room on this. So I got in contact with Doyle's Hotel at Doherty Cusack and Murrin King. And I said,
and they all stepped in, yeah.
They all stepped in just to help, you know.
Yeah, and when Alison is over, we'll probably have you all in for a chat at the other side,
nice.
Which would be great. I'm going to let you go and I'm going to let Adam go because I want to chat to Alison on her own, if that's okay. So, Anthony, thanks for emailing the show.
No,
Adam,
no.
Well done on the cards and the letters. And enjoy your summer holidays. Good luck. See you.
Okay, bye. All the best.
Thank
bye.
You.
Bye. Bye. Alison.
Yes.
How are you? You've had a tough life. That's an understatement, isn't it?
Probably. It's somebody else looking in, yes.
Yes,
probably.
Yeah. So for people who don't know about you, they probably would have seen your statue. Tell us about that first.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I was going to do a sculpture for, you know, be the model for somebody, Mark Quinn. And I was like, no, I don't want to do this. It sounds weird. So he sort of gave up and said, okay, she doesn't want to do it. And then a year later, he phoned me back and said, would you do it? And I went, oh, you won't want to do it now. I'm pregnant. And, of course, he nearly dropped the phone. He was like, yes, that's amazing. So that's really how that started.
Yes.
I mean, obviously, I didn't get onto the plinths until Paris was 5 at the time. So, you know, it was amazing. I mean, to see yourself, you know, I'm 3'10", to see yourself 16 feet tall sitting down is like, it's just mind-blowing, really. And I just think it did a lot of people, you know, good. There was a lot of controversy, and I understand that. But at the end of the day, if you don't go out and do things, life and people's attitudes are never going to change.
No. And the controversy was around the fact that you're disabled, I suppose. You were born with no arms and short legs and you were naked. And that was the controversy.
Well, and the fact that I was pregnant as well.
Pregnant
single
as well.
Mother.
Yes.
Yeah, single mother, pregnant, disabled, you know.
Yeah.
Ticks all the boxes, doesn't it, really?
Yeah. That'll get them going. I think you said at the time that, you know, to be involved in something that would outlive both you and Paris was part of the attraction or a lot of the attraction.
Absolutely. Obviously, not knowing at the time that I would lose Paris at when he was 19, but the fact that there's something out there, a piece of history that, you know, you've made or, you know, you've been involved in is quite phenomenal, really.
Mm. When I say you had a tough life, you were abandoned by your parents as a baby, and yeah. You were brought up in Chailey Heritage School, which was a residential home for severely disabled children.
Yes.
And you were there till 18.
17. Yeah, I was there, and then I went on to another place for another 2 years. So I kind of always looked at it that I've done. Oh, I don't know what crime it was, but I've done the time.
And out of that, out of your disability, comes this amazing strength and resilience, which in every interview I've seen with you, you can sense it. It bounces off the screen.
Thank you.
Yeah, there's an amazing strength about you, but I'd say that was, and still has been, severely tested by Paris's death.
Absolutely. I mean, I have to say, I do have bad days and I have good days because I miss him. I just, you know, I can't hear his voice anymore. I can't talk to him. Can't give him a hug. And it's those things that really hit home, really, to be honest with you, you know.
And it was an accidental drug overdose, and
they think yes,
yeah,
and also mental health
yes
problems.
So this is horrific that he was bullied because of you.
Yes, at school, I stopped going to parents' evenings because he just told me one evening and he said, "Mum, please don't come. Tell them you're ill because." They just, you know, the other kids take the mickey. And I did what he asked because I didn't want to make it any worse for him than it, you know, it already was. When I picked him up, I'd always have to be somewhere where other people couldn't see me. And he'd get in the back of my van and he'd hide until we were out of the way, you know, because they would just take the mickey. I mean, his close friends didn't. They were brilliant. And I'd known them most since they were about four. So that was fine. But, you know, other children, they can be very unkind at times. That's why it struck me with the boys, really, how amazing that was for them to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. I've read that you found great solace from that. And I suppose it's part of it was because that boys of a certain age would have bullied Paris at a certain time, you know. So to see.
Yeah.
Them coming to console you was brilliant.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You know, how many young people would do that? And I mean, the Christmas cards as well, because, you know, that was off their own backs, which was just, you know, I didn't expect that. I didn't expect to hear from them again.
Yeah.
But, you know, this relationship just kind of started and has evolved. And I did say, right, we're coming over. I've got to meet you all. So, but we will still come over and do a workshop with them, even if they're in another class or another teacher. We're still going to, you know, as soon as we can, we'll be there.
Great. Where did the art start for you, Alison?
For me,
yeah.
I was 3 years old, and I can remember painting and drawing with my foot. There's a little bit of silly film of me, and I've got these awful artificial leg arms on, and they're trying to make me hold the pens in the arms, and I'm not having any of it, and I'm actually doing it with my feet. So it's probably always been there, because people say to me, well, if you were able-bodied, what would you have done? And I went, be an artist.
Yeah.
You know, it's in my soul. It's it's what makes me thrive. So, you know, it's something that's really important to me. You know, and I'm a mouth and foot painting artist. So, you know, the Christmas cards and all of that, it's very important because I actually get paid for what I do, which is brilliant.
It's important,
you know?
Yeah. And you got your MBE for your contribution to the arts.
Indeed.
And when the statue of you was on the plinth in Trafalgar Square, and when you were getting a lot of coverage around getting your MBE, and you were featured on Child of Our Time, yourself in Paris, on the BBC, did anybody from your past, you know, try and contact you?
No, not really.
No.
I think, you know, you move forward, don't you? I tend not to hang on to the past, and I've always said I would never be anyone's victim, and I still stick to those words even today, that, you know, if you want to try and do me harm, fair enough, but I'm not going to be your victim, and you know, you move on. And I'm so lucky because I'm strong, and
yeah.
I don't know where I get that from. I wish I could share it with people and give it to other people, because it certainly helped me during my life.
And that's interesting you say that, because like, there you are, no arms, short legs, 3'10", very visibly disabled, and yet you were completely comfortable with your body.
Yes.
And then Paris, your son, who was completely able-bodied,
mm-hmm.
he had issues around his
he
body.
He did, yeah. He really did. Yeah. He got told he was fat when he was 9. Paris is as skinny as a rake all the way through. So this whole body image, and I always thought, oh, you know, he'll learn it from me, but he didn't. I thought I would have been an example.
Yes.
But I was his mum. It's different. You're just my mum. And that's what he used to say. And I used to say, yeah, but son, you know, it's better to feel good about yourself. But he just could not. He couldn't get there.
And you couldn't communicate that to him? Like,
I tried.
Yeah.
I tried lots. But he was so depressed. And in a world of his own. And he just wasn't listening. Bless him. And I think, you know, you can say that to anybody. If they're not ready to hear it, then they don't hear it. And, you know, it taught me a lot, actually, that, you know, you just because you're feeling good about you doesn't mean that everybody else is.
Yeah, yeah. I watched an interview where you said you desperately tried to protect them, because that's what parents
yes.
do.
Yes.
You know, that's our sole purpose, isn't it, to protect
Absolutely.
Our children.
Absolutely, yes. Yeah.
And so that makes it heartbreaking, completely heartbreaking.
And I've lost my little funny man who used to make me laugh and, you know, hugged a lot, and we watched rubbish TV together, and I'd hide behind his shoulder because it was scary, and, you know, those sort of things. I mean,
yeah.
We did have a lovely mum and son relationship.
And he's ever present in your life and in your art as well.
I know. He's
That's a bit scary, isn't it?
It's bizarre. And I actually had to say to a few people, who does this remind you of? And they're like, it's Paris. And I'm like, no, it can't be. I've never attempted to draw or paint Paris, because I always said, you're too beautiful for me to even try. And that's the way I left it.
Yeah.
I used to photograph him, but painting. And then he appears. In fact, I'm doing another one at the moment, and it's Paris again.
Right.
It has appeared on the canvas.
Does that give you comfort?
I suppose it does. It makes it feel like he's there with me.
Mm.
You know, kind of working through me. And, you know, as I say, I never painted Paris before, and he just keeps coming out, which is amazing.
And he was a beautiful child. He was like a good-looking Macaulay Culkin, wasn't he?
Yes, he was.
The blonde
yeah.
hair and the...
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Big blue eyes.
Yeah, yeah.
Butter wouldn't melt in his mouth. So he was so naughty as well.
Yeah.
Bless him, so...
So you will take us up on that invitation when you do get here to meet the fifth class from St. Joseph's National School. It could be sixth class by then, or maybe in college. We don't know where things are going.
No, when's it going to be safe to come over?
Yeah, but anyway, you will come into us. Karen has been on, Alison. She says, I followed Alison and Paris's progress on BBC Child of Our Time. Their bond was amazing, and the way they looked after each other was amazing. My son born around the same time, so upset to hear about Paris. That's Karen there offering her condolences. Alison, thank you so much for talking to us today, and we will talk in the future.
I hope so.
Mind
It'll
yourself.
Be my pleasure.
Mind yourself. Bye now. Bye.
You too. Bye.
Bye.